Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Oh, my sweet lord, it's BudPod 59, I believe. How are you guys doing?
59 for some swifty swines. It's,
Yes, swifty swines.
Phil Wang here with Pianovelli and a special surprise quarantined guest. It's Glenn Moore.
Hello, thank you so much for having me in your living room. Irresponsible.
Thanks.
but kind.
Thanks for beaming in.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you very much.
Glenn is, well, if anything, Glenn is the most professionally experienced in this game. Glenn is a news broadcaster and occasional comedian.
Fuck you.
How are you doing, Glenn? How's the quarantine treating you?
I'm all right. It's okay. I don't want to imply I'm having a great time or anything like that, because obviously I know that sort of a lot of people aren't, but it's okay. I still get to do my radio show in the morning, and mostly it is just jigsaws and movies and video games. That's at the moment. I think it's I guess I'm experiencing like the summer holidays of a 15-year-old that I myself probably like never had. So it's in many ways it's really liberating.
Yeah, I mean you've got the work ethic of someone who comes from a family from maybe the sort of 50s, where it's like you work so hard, it's like your dad is a guy who's like, you better go do that learning, boy. You're the only hope this family has.
But with no real purpose or end game. I was telling my girlfriend the other day that even on like holiday, if we were on holiday to somewhere like Greece or somewhere like that, me and my sister would still have to do like an hour every day from like maths textbooks. This is like during the summer holidays. There wasn't even like a curriculum. Yeah. I mean, I was like, didn't you have to do that? And she was like, no, because there wasn't, it wasn't working towards anything. Why were you given that?
We were on holiday. And it was,
yeah, I know. Yeah, exactly. It was a real sort of like, don't have too much fun.
So now you're like the fucking around version of like the principal or the vicar's daughter.
Yes, yeah, and this is I haven't had less of a work ethic ever. This is honestly, it's incredible.
I love the idea that you, in order to try and keep your child completely safe from ever fully relaxing, you've accidentally raised like a relaxing expert.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Although having said that, I keep seeing online everyone sort of like, God, I haven't worn trousers in a month now and stuff. I feel I still dress too smartly for quarantine. I still wear jeans. That's still
I still like, dress up an absolute. I still dress up for dinner. It's called a dinner jacket for a reason, folks.
Well, my excuse is that it's summer now, so I'm wearing shorts and sandals. From waking till sleeping.
That's a great idea.
Well, you're wearing sandals. Wait, in the house.
Sandals indoors.
Yeah, a lot of the time. Yeah,
that makes you sound like a crazy person.
One of my housemates used to. Old housemates, this is like 8 years ago. Would wear sandals in the shower, which was a real insult to the rest of us who lived with him. That he so grubby were our feet, according to him. So diseased and contagious that he had to protect his soles at all times.
At boarding school, when I was in boarding in Brunei, everyone had a room and had your two roommates, and you had a shared shower in that room. And I remember once my friend Harry, he was getting sick of following in his roommate Io. Because Io would leave, and this is Harry's own terminology, would leave a particularly disgusting wet. He called the little puddle of water left in the shower after someone used it, they're wet. And he's I'm sick of stepping into Io's wet.
I'm so fully on board with that. I've lived with people in the past who occasionally leave like a soaking wet floor, and that's annoying. But what's worse is a fully formed wet footprint that you see that someone's left. They've just walked down a shower because it feels like some fucking like Lady of the Lake,
yeah,
ghost situation. But also, it's so cold. It's colder than tap water.
A yeti has melted. flow down the drain.
But if you follow the footprints, you'll find a dying snowman in the room, just like curled up.
I think that what would be more insulting than the sandals and the shower thing, like only ever using the communal kitchen, wearing full rubber gloves.
Yeah, full PPE. Every time you're in the kitchen.
I think if ever you made them like a cup of tea or anything like that, pretend sipping from it like you're humouring a child at their sort of garden party. And you go, ooh, delicious, and you sort of raise the cup to your lips, but you keep handing back a full mug.
Oh,
like you know in the Edinburgh Fringe where like you'd flyer someone on the Royal Mile and they'd look at the flyer and they'd go, very nice, and then they'd walk away and you go, no, I wasn't showing you a flyer. Like you haven't been more polite this way.
It's not about the graphic design here.
Yeah, I don't feel better about myself that you've complimented it and not taken
on the
one.
Subject of being a clean freak in Malaysia. I knew a guy who whenever he ate French fries at like a McDonald's or something, he would hold one end of the French fry, eat it up to the end, and then he would put the end that he was holding down because he didn't want to eat the bit of the fry that he was touching.
He would stub out his French fries.
Yeah, he would stub them out like cigs. He would get none of the end, and then squish it and put it back in the paper. The most fucking insane thing I've ever seen in my life.
He would put an ashtray on his desk and say, "Mind if I eat chips?" And
yeah,
slowly.
I'm trying to quit, but they're just too good. Yeah, that was the craziest thing I'd ever seen.
That is astonishing. That's like if you left the rind of a hamburger.
Yeah.
like it was a particularly crusty melon.
I mean, that is kind of the point. That's
oh,
why
someone peeling a hamburger in the first place.
Sorry?
Someone peeling a hamburger in the first place. A sort of peeling off like the poppy seed bit, but in its entirety. And then you get to the meat and sort of peeling back. Like someone who would like peel the casing on a sausage. Like,
I slipped on a sausage peel.
Yeah.
Like, what? You did what?
Imagine if sausage peels were the go-to like comic visual. It'd be disgusting. Comedy would be disgusting if sausage
skin. Oh, it'd be so much worse. Yeah, they say. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone
never see bananas being made. That's what they always say. Never go to the banana factory to see how they're made. Never ever do that. You'll never eat bananas again. I've always liked that phrase of like, never go see, like, what factory was offering that tour? Like, I was never ever given the opportunity to watch sausages being made.
Like a disgusting Willy Wonka, where it's just yeah. Oompa Loompas mincing pigs. Do you think
one of them is called the Meat Boys, and they have like various meat based raps that they come out and sing after a child's been brutally killed in front of them?
Yeah, they've been minced. Do you think if bananas were made like sausages, what are they mincing up to make a banana, like cartoon characters or something? Like what?
Oh, that's a really good point.
Like what creature's flesh when minced is a banana texture, like sweet and fibrous, like.
It'd have to be like a seafood that hasn't been discovered yet. A particularly squishy sea cucumber probably tastes like a banana, but to get it, you have to dive deep into the sea where all the fish have their own lights.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That's a weird trope, isn't it? Like, I don't. For all I know, those creatures don't exist. They could just be fan art. Like, I don't. I've never seen one of those light bulb fit. Why would they need a light bulb? Like,
I saw a thing.
What are they looking at? There's nothing there.
Because I have nothing to do with my life, I spent a good portion of time the other day, maybe like 2 days ago, reading the Wikipedia article for vampire squids. And they're the weirdest fucking things. They live in the bit of the sea where there is no light. Like, you can't measure any light at all. And they have glowing filaments on them. They've got like LEDs, like they're like a shitty disco ball. Genuinely, like they wink like red, yellow, green. It's creepy and weird.
Those are the ones I don't believe when they don't have like a lengthy Latin name. They've just got a pop culture based name, and it's called like, oh, this is the Frankenstein tortoise. And you go, what? Come on, grow up. Give it a Latin name that we can't understand.
Yeah, things are much scarier with a really long Latin name. If it took them 14 syllables to say it, you'd think, fuck, this is serious. It's so serious they haven't had the time to call it the Frankenstein tortoise. There's too much levity in that for this dangerous beast.
This is serious. You've been giving it a name for ages. The name's gone on for too long.
That's true of diseases as well, isn't it? You want it to be a really long German name and then like phenomenon.
Oh yeah, phenomenon, that's or incident.
Yeah. I'm afraid you're suffering from Kreutzler-Benz-Stiefenstein phenomenon. You go, oh, shit.
But also, it's easy to group those all into one big category and you go, is that just the one where I just eat every object? Is it that one?
Yeah, is it a type of slightly funny mania?
Yeah. Or you could have like an inappropriately cutesy disease name. Like, I've always thought shingles sounds quite nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've got shingles. Or rickets.
Yeah, rickets is very
rickets
dainty,
sounds
isn't
like
it?
Fun. Rickets sounds like a percussive instrument.
Ironically, rickets sounds like a nickname you'd give to a Victorian orphan on crutches with rickets.
Oh, yeah, massively so, yeah.
Do you think, are there any serious diseases that have cute names, like you were saying, Phil, shingles and things, but like flump, like I'm afraid you have flump.
Flump?
Yeah.
Isn't dropsy
is very cute.
Yeah. As a kid, yeah. I always thought dropsy meant that you just kept dropping things.
but there are a few diseases that are really descriptive, but they just tell you what the disease is. Mumps always sounded a bit fun.
Yeah, mumps is close enough to lumps that it involves the lumps.
Well, in Malay, the name for diabetes is just sweet piss. That's what diabetes is.
Are you kidding?
No, that's Malay for diabetes. Sweet piss.
So is there type 1 sweet piss and type 2 sweet piss?
Yeah. Yeah, this.
That's like something that like a horrible version of something that's something would say to you at a strip club or something, hey there, sweet piss. That's a horrible thing to say.
Yeah, also, like that's the sort of thing you'd get called in a strip club where you're clearly not welcome there, and it's like I feel like the strippers are bullying me, but I can't put my finger on it. They're antagonizing me with fetishes.
He's a pimp that no one respects. Hey, sweet piss. Please, I ask you, stop calling me that.
That's one time.
I like, do you think, Phil, that that's going to make people in Malaysia not take diabetes seriously enough, where they're like, well, I got sweet piss, who gives a fuck? Like, it's really not the main problem with diabetes. It's like, oh, now my piss is all sweet. There's
oh,
handsome.
No, I'm delicious, am I? Oh, boo-hoo.
More people die in female-named storms because it's usually a case of, like, men don't take the storm as seriously if it's called, like, Storm Janice. But, like, well, actually, if the storm was called Storm Piss, would you would you stay inside? But if it was called Storm Sweet Piss, you go, oh, I might check out this storm.
I might. That would be a really funny thing for you to say, Glenn, to your girlfriend after sitting on the couch and being completely silent for a very long time. To just suddenly say, without looking at anyone, might go check out this storm.
Yeah. Why are you taking your shirt off? No reason.
Might go check out this storm.
Why are you taking that pan outside?
Yeah. And kneeling in it like Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, you wouldn't take a disease seriously if the first thing you heard about it was that it made your fart smell like cinnamon. You'd go, oh, is it the gumdrop kingdom disease? This is great. What a wonderful fable I'm living in.
But strokes smell of burnt toast. You can smell burnt toast if you're having the beginnings of a stroke, and I've always thought that felt quite homely in a way.
You can smell.
Yeah, that's true.
You
even
can smell
even
a Sunday roast.
The word stroke is quite nice because I like to be stroked. It's nice. So if you have a stroke where you just feel like a pampered cat for a bit,
Yeah, that's misleading. I wonder why they call it a stroke. That's got to be some weird arcane version of it where there's like, we call it that because it looked like it was like being stroked by God. Like, it was actually that bad for you.
But stroked so hard it pulled down one side of your face. Such was the hardness of the stroking.
Yeah, they're just a very, like, you got just gone to see a very strong aunt.
If your aunt was like Lenny from Of Mice and Men. Yeah. She's killed a lot of nieces and nephews.
What's a food situation like where you are at Glen? Are you cooking a lot?
No, my girlfriend is. She's really enjoying the relaxing nature of baking. So we've just been having the really stereotypical stuff, you know, your flatbreads, your banana breads, that sort of thing. And it's been, honestly, it's been terrific. We started off with a limit of 2 takeaways per week, one on weekdays and then one on weekend. And then we realized that was that's too many. But like 2 takeaways a week is still too many. So we have one a week. And I found myself asking what the next takeaway is going to be, often seconds after we've ordered that week's takeaway. Like, it's, I really am wondering all the time, like, where the next takeaway is coming from, what genre it's going to be.
That sounds like an appeal for sort of Glens who are in trouble. They're wondering where the next takeaway is coming from.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just looking at delivery menus like all the time, and I keep occasionally just putting stuff in the basket, knowing I'm going to empty the basket. But I just sort of go, oh, what would this particular combination of dishes come to price wise? Oh, okay, that's one to bear in mind for the future. I get it's pathetic. It's so pathetic that it sees me through.
You're like a dad looking up boats, just to see.
They say that the happiest day of your life is when you get a takeaway, and the second happiest day of your life is when you get rid of that takeaway. They've always said that, haven't they? It's a famous phrase.
I remember when I was a teenager, and you're going through that age as boys where you're all getting into cars because you're just starting to be able to drive, and like the guys would go on these sort of like searches online at cars they wish they could buy, but they're all still just sort of slightly better hatchbacks, and I was like, if you're gonna play fantasy, why not just go for it? Oh no, yeah, look how souped up this Golf is. It's like, no, just go on the Ferrari website, come on, live a little.
Just Google Batmobile and have done with it.
Yeah. I love a real lack of ambition like that. I really, like, there was a guy I lived with at uni. I think his ambition was, I'm certain this is exactly what his ambition is, like, absolute dream was to be friends with a billionaire. Like, it was like, if I was like best friends with a billionaire, it'd just be crazy. And it was like, but it's a wish. You can wish for anything. And he was like, yeah, just being friends with that guy's got loads of money, and he'd give me some of that money as well. It was just so,
it's like really wanting to be in a successful rapper's crew.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, my dream is to be in the entourage.
Yeah, I want to be in the background, but I want to still be able to see all the rich stuff that's happening.
Yeah, my dream was to get down to the final two between me and Daniel Radcliffe for Harry Potter. That was the dream, just to get to the final, to get to that final two and have it hang around my neck like an albatross for the rest of my life.
Yeah,
you could have been. I want to be able to say, Harry Potter, Glenn. You must have been annoyed.
I had an audition booked in, the audition had to be sort of pushed back because we were going on a family holiday. And then they cast Daniel Radcliffe, and I was like, so is the audition still going ahead?
Are you going to audition for the second movie?
It's really, really weird. I love the idea that he was constantly having to go through the audition process for every film. Like in EastEnders, the guy who plays Ian Beale has to audition for every episode of EastEnders for the role of Ian Beale, but he's just that good. He's that good, he gets it 5 times a week.
You've done it again, Mr. Beale.
That was the first time I ever really got, like, hit hard by information was on holiday and seeing these newspaper stands where Daniel Radcliffe was on the front cover of all of them. It's so weird to have the worst news you've received and find out from the front page of a newspaper. It made me feel like it made me feel like in a weird way like a king. Like that's how members of royalty find stuff out about their relatives.
Yeah. That must have felt very powerful as a child to see a newspaper headline and go, "What?" And like grab it and throw the vendor a couple of coins.
And it's awful when you're on holiday as well. I swam very sadly that day.
Yeah. You had a really mournful lie down next to a pool.
Yeah.
You stared into a lovely big burger.
Then I did my maths textbook for an hour.
Then you did a maths textbook for an hour as a piece of unbelievably cruel. That's so mad.
I know, it's so mad.
Like it's so rare to hear that and for it not to be followed up by, and then, of course, I had to go live in the cupboard.
Yeah.
Like, I'm amazed they didn't escalate on you, Glenn.
Yeah, it's there's nothing wrong with it, but it overall you just ultimately is profoundly not okay.
Yes, it's like if someone had a car parked outside their house, but also they had an unregistered car that they also drove. There's nothing.
Yeah,
like it's not great, but it's not that bad. But it's about what it implies beyond.
But wasn't there something a little underhanded about how Daniel Radcliffe got that role anyway? Like he knew someone, or his parents knew someone, or something.
Well, I recognised him from either a BBC or ITV adaptation of David Copperfield, where he played the lead role, maybe a couple of years previously. So I was like, oh, why were they doing like open auditions if they go for the, you know, remember when Star Wars for The Force Awakens had those enormous auditions around like Twickenham Stadium and the like. And they were like, and it's for two lead roles, and then they went for like John Boyega from Attack the Block. It was like, well, yeah, I really love those auditions because so many people were turning up in like Jedi robes and dressed like Princess Leia as if it was like the Beano, that they were going to go in the room and they go, oh, we can start filming now. You're dressed. Yeah, that's great. Come right through. We've got the set behind us.
You've saved us $100.
The auditions were open, but you had to apply with a full film. You had to audition with an entire movie.
How funny would it be if it was open Star Wars auditions and you went in the room and they went, right, move that with your mind.
Yeah.
Use the Force and move that cup with your mind. John Boyega can do it, or whatever. Like they really just messed with all the fans in that level of cruelty. Do you think they just do the big open auditions because it's like a huge PR story that everyone will tediously cover by interviewing the weirdest people in the queue?
Maybe, but who wasn't going to see Star Wars?
I suppose.
I don't know if there was anyone who saw it like on a DVD rack months later and they were like, when was that?
I suppose it's just a guaranteed way of getting coverage, isn't it? Like, you just say to the director and the producer, look, sit in this room, we'll keep bringing you Diet Cokes and takeaway food, and just let this parade of hopelessness pass before your eyes, and we'll get on all rolling news channels for at least 2 hours repeated throughout the day, guaranteed, and all the newspapers and stuff. Like, it's just for free, isn't it, really?
Yeah. It's somewhat... Ahishad have a audition? Like, actual proper audition?
For Star Wars? Why did I say Star Wars
certainly
like
did.
That?
That was weird. The Force Awakens!
Sorry, just to separate it from Star Trek and Stardust, Star Wars.
Yeah.
Star Wars.
And stars in their eyes.
Maybe he did, yeah.
I'm certain he did. Well, I don't know if he's been told whether or not he's in it yet.
Well, by coincidence, I saw Evelyn Mock in Spider-Man last night.
Yes!
I forgot to message her straight afterwards, but it was like, it's a real leaping up in your seat moment whenever you see a friend in a film, because it's always just so brief enough to be like, oh my God, did I dream that?
Yeah.
And also, if it's your friend in the film and they're being like, you know, not the main character, if you're with people who don't know them, it's a really annoying person to get excited about seeing.
Yeah.
Because you're like, hey, do you remember that person in the background who said that line? And they go, no. And you go, that was my friend who you don't know.
I saw someone in the someone I know.
Yeah, you might as well have just gone, that was a person there. A person played that part. Yeah.
But I saw a friend of mine in one brief 2-second shot in the press conference room in an episode of Sunderland Till I Die yesterday, and I thought, it's not even worth getting in touch with him. Like, I won't even message him to say I saw you. What's the point?
Yeah, I almost texted Evelyn, but I was so late watching Spider-Man Far From Home. It must be annoying for her. Or, like, at this point, insulting that it's taken me this long and that I've paid this little attention to her social media.
Yeah.
I did this with a friend of mine a friend of ours, Kieran Dowd, who I was watching Fighting With My Family.
Yes, I saw him in that. That was a fun
back
one.
Home. And I saw him and I texted him his line in the film, but his line was something like, get your tits out, or something like that. It was something really boorish, and I just sent him that. And obviously enough time had passed from the film coming out that he was like, what? What? Have you sent this to the right person? I'd be like, no, you, that's what you say every day.
In our head, this person hasn't moved on since this one role, and then they just sat at home waiting.
In my head, the film was live.
Or like, you expect them to react to that text, Glenn, by like... doing the actor thing of sort of touching their chest. Thank you. Oh, yes. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what? I don't know how I expected you to react. And I don't really know what I wanted to get out of that exchange. And I don't know what I wanted you to get out of it either.
Yes, exactly. On a slightly different note, but kind of pinged up in my head with the whole Star Wars thing. Phil.
Mm.
I have a theory, and I don't know if you have an input on this, Glenn, that my original accent is coming back more now that I'm not mixing with basically anyone else.
Oh, that's interesting.
Interesting.
I feel like every now and then I'll be saying things in a way that is inappropriately South African, given that I'm not, you know...
So you're
it's weird.
You're saying
when you say
slowly
inappropriately
being
South African. That's a broad spectrum, Pierre. That could be.
You know, I'm recommending shoot to kill policies to myself. Yeah. And things.
Are you saying you're slowly being returned to factory settings?
Yes, it's like all my sort of well-spoken, integrated Britishness is being eroded by the wind on my own, like a lonely outcrop, like sand.
So then, do you not talk to yourself when you're around just in your own company? So you only realize it when you're talking to other people and you go, God, I sound weird.
No, I realize it when I talk to myself. Like I'll use a particular syntactical construction or
you
some slang.
You talk to yourself? You mean in your head or out loud?
Sometimes out loud.
Apparently it's a sign of an intelligent person.
I'll take that, sure. That's
although
like that's like
people
that's
say
like
that
half those sort of things, cause that's, I love the idea of like... people who are really obsessed with in my head I'm just generic Citibankers in my head, but people really obsessed with just business and self-improvement, and people who, as soon as they read that, immediately just start talking to themselves at every opportunity, like the sort of people who read that, like, oh, billionaires get up at 4 a.m. so every day they get up at 4 a.m. they just watch CBeebies for like 2 hours. Like, this is a billionaire thing, this is what Steve Jobs did.
Or they sit in bed just going, ugh. Oh, I'm so just like then when you're so tired, it's like your whole face hurts, and they just go, "When is this helping?" Do you think like it's helpful to become a billionaire to get up at 4 a.m. Because it makes you so angry and grumpy that you're just more ruthless for the whole day because you're furious?
I had a theory a couple of years ago that it's just what billionaires tell their rivals. So that all their rivals are then just really sleepy. And they go, so yeah, we reached the top of the FTSE 100 because everyone else was just napping by the time it got to like 10 a.m.
They couldn't sell their stock because the guy was crashing after a sweet coffee.
Because I think the reason they always give is sort of like, well, you know, it's if you get up at 4 a.m., that's around the time that Tokyo is waking up or that sort of thing. You go, but that's not the time we're waking, like...
But then,
any country's waking up at any time.
Won't the billionaires in Tokyo be waking up at 4 a.m. their side? So then you have to get up
exactly,
at 12 a.m.
The only people you can talk to is other billionaires in your country who are also getting up at 4 a.m. And all you can talk about is just how tired you all are.
Also, by the time you're a billionaire, you have £1,000 million. You've earned a lion. Have a sleep.
Yeah, exactly. I've always thought it'd be a great way to leave a party, like a really good excuse. You go, so I've got to shoot off. LA will be waking up around about now. And I don't think anyone would really question it.
And then if they say, well, do you have some kind of business thing? And you go, no, no.
Just want to watch Conan.
Correspondence with Glenn Moore.
More respondents. Hello. More respondents this week. Glenn, you don't mind listening to the absolute reprobates that listen to the show, do you?
Honestly, it's one of my favourite parts of the show. And that's not a slight on YouTube. but some really lurid stuff has often cropped up in those. So I can't wait. I'm all ears.
Oh, well, actually, I'm so sorry to bring this to a grinding halt, but one of the reasons, and we'd want you anyway, of course, Glenn, but one of the reasons we've always wanted you on this podcast in particular is that you have a particularly interesting poo tale. I don't know if you're comfortable talking about this.
Which one?
Yeah, there's a few. Right,
I don't know if there was too many. Well, there's one specific sort of running poo-related habit, isn't there?
What?
Oh, the time scale.
Oh, the time scale.
Yes, about how
yeah,
much?
Yeah, it's nowhere near as severe as it used to be, but I'm because it's in the past, I'm very happy to... Okay. Oh, honestly, I'm happy to talk about everything. You guys are very open about this sort of thing, so I'm happy to... yeah, go on, let's just... Because okay. the amount of friends of mine who on podcasts and stuff have alluded to the distance between each of my bowel movements, but has never actually been explicitly
and not a geographical mentioned. Distance, by the way. Glenn doesn't like
no purely time based.
Yeah. And so it's once a quarter. How bad did it get?
It used to be for years and years and years for the overwhelming majority of my life once a week.
Astonishing. So I mean, great. I remember when you told me that, and I had to sit down. I think.
I think to shit because you were shitting far more frequently.
Yes. It's all the more surprising because you look like a healthy person. You've got sort of rosy cheeks. You always have a bit of a spring in your step. And someone who doesn't shit for 7 days on the trot, I expect to be sort of grey and slow.
Hunched over.
No, what are you talking about? I'm fully in defence that this is like a progressive trait. And actually, this is evolution. Because I've always been.
Is this your wake up at 4 a.m.? Are people going to say, you don't get more than only shits once a week?
I have always. Yeah, I want everyone to rupture their bowels in agony. I have always been like adamant that I've never understood why scientists aren't always trying to find a cure for shitting. Like, I've never understood, like, why isn't that? Obviously, like, COVID-19 is now the priority. But before then, why wasn't that just on the back burner? Because it's not good, is it? It's not, it doesn't feel healthy as it happens. It's not pleasant.
It is so, weird. It is weird that
satellites. Why aren't they trying to find a way to stop that? I just find it weird. So I personally think surely it's the healthiest and cleanest thing you can do to not have this permanently sullied ass. yeah. That you go, it's yeah, but it, like what a clean bum you have if the last movement you had was 6 days ago. Amazing, isn't that
so? It's
great?
A principle. It's a decision on principle you made more than anything.
No, but it wasn't a decision. I didn't decide that. But it just didn't, and it wasn't even like when the need came, it was like, oh my god, it needs to happen now. It was like, oh, I kind of need to go, so I'll do that tomorrow when I've got a spare moment.
Incredible.
It was just, yeah. I plan it. Yeah, it just didn't need to, I could just put it off. But in a way, like, whereas my understanding of you people is that it's almost like, it's like pissing. And you, like, if you even have, because I have that with, like, if I have the slightest inclination that in the next 20 minutes, I might potentially need a piss, then I wouldn't be able to fall asleep. And I remember staying around a friend of mine's house in it when I was like 18, and he was like, we're basically having a sleepover like in his living room with a bunch of us, and he was like almost writhing around under his duvet, under his sleeping bag in agony. And I was like, you okay? And he was like, I'm so dying for a piss. He said, I'm actually in agony. And then he just went, I'll just do it tomorrow. And then he just fell asleep. And it was like, what have you done? But I needed one, then I could hold it in for a few days and not remotely need one. And also, can I just stress, because this is a question I've faced from people a lot in the past, were they enormous? And it's like, no, they were. They were just regular. It was just like the other day's worth of turds almost just disappeared. I don't know where they went. I just don't know where they went.
But I think, like, if they were normal size, they must have been hyper dense, like a neutron star.
they dented the.
It's every time you took a shit, it was like a really big church bell.
Yeah, if you flushed it, you'd hear it sort of clattering around the pipes, like when like the metal dog in Wallace and Gromit. It would just be creating dents.
It'd be like you were trying to flush a bar of gold.
Like in Goodfellas, like the police are knocking on the door, like, just a second.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolute cacophony of noise.
Oh, man.
Maybe the fatberg they found in London was just Glenn's shit. Maybe that was just one.
Yeah,
condensed.
Full of nappies and.
It would be so funny.
I was just
to
eating
see...
anything. I was like that French guy Truerre or whatever his name was, the guy who just couldn't stop eating hundreds of years ago. Yeah.
Oh, the guy who ate like glass and stuff and.
Yeah,
bicycles.
He was just and then he got kicked out of a hospital because they were like, one of the babies is missing.
No.
It was mad. Obviously, this was hundreds and hundreds of years ago, but yeah.
He ate stray cats
smell.
And dogs in front of people as well.
It was crazy. He had a visible smell. You could see just tendrils of smell coming from him. He had very baggy skin, apparently. the description of him is absolutely vile. It's brilliant.
It's the closest
thing.
It's
like some sort of creepypasta Slenderman story or something.
It's the closest thing you can find to a Wikipedia article saying, one time there was a demon.
Yeah.
There was just a demon. We have no idea how or why, but by God, he was. Yeah. But so it's more normal now, Glenn.
Yeah, not tremendously. Because a friend of mine said he goes about three times a day, and we worked out that by the age of about five, he'd done as many turds as I'd done in my lifetime.
So, like, your shitting graphs are like wealth inequality in the third world. It's just an unbelievable gap that will never close.
But I think my life's all the better for it. I've saved so much time.
I guess. I still worry about...
What have you done with that time?
Lots of pissing.
Extra pissing.
Maybe that's where all the other turds have gone. They're just somehow
just
dissolved.
They had to go somewhere, because otherwise I would have been about 20 stone if they were just constantly accumulating in me.
Yeah, and they'd accumulate exponentially because the rate at which you're disposing of them is not high enough.
Mm. There's just a tremendous backlog. Pun fully intended.
Very good. And what a great...
I was just going to say, one day you'll finally do it and you'll just be like a four-year-old boy. Like, you'll shrink down so much.
Oh, yeah, you'll just Benjamin Button.
Yeah. And for some reason, like, all my suit sleeves and that are really baggy. Like, every... it's not a case of I've shrunk, it's just my clothes got longer.
What happened to Glenn? Well, he shat his clothes long.
On the topic of backlog, I suppose we should actually read some of these letters.
Yes, let's do it. Okay, so a quick message from Joe.
Jojo, here we go.
There you go. So Joe basically is referencing back when we were discussing about me being born underneath all the different Aries signs and all
that.
Oh,
yeah.
That I could. So he says, I was just wondering, were you holding anything in your still bloody infant hand? I believe that Temujin, or Genghis Khan, was said to be holding a blood clot when he popped out the fanny, which is true, yeah.
Blood clot as in a bit of dried coagulated blood, or like the Caribbean insult?
I think both in one hand, yeah.
He's just holding a real wanker in his hand. Look at his blood clot.
Yeah, yeah. And he says, I think the Thracian slave and Kirk Douglas lookalike Spartacus was said to be holding a snake when he was born, which seems less likely. Because yeah, what does that say about your weird mum?
Imagine if the father got really upset because this was proof that his wife had been having an affair with a snake. Who the hell are you? And he grabs a snake and starts, chases it down the road.
My mother told me not to marry someone who speaks parcel tongue, she said. She'll only use it to seduce that big snake down the road. So he says, what pretentious item was Pierre holding? I would say, having listened to nearly every episode of your scat pod, that you may have been clutching a poo, but that seems anatomically impossible. Keep on jacking it, Joe.
Well, it's not that impossible, because you come out as a baby right next to your mum's ass hole. And most of the time you swallow a whole bit of poo, and that's how you develop various immunities to sort of bacteria and stuff. So you in a way you do come out holding shit.
But that implies as he came out, he then grabbed a shit the second he left.
Yeah, like
Indiana
relay
Jones
race.
Grabbing his hat.
Whoop, don't want to leave this. I wasn't holding anything, but I did have the umbilical cord around my neck loads of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's a good thing I was a cesarean and I avoided.
Oh, yeah.
I'm vaguely skeptical about the actual. I'm sure you swallow, like, material, but I don't know how you'd swallow poo. Swallow it.
Well, because you're when you're being born, your face is facing your mum's ace hole, and she's shitting away, and it just gets all over you.
It's so weird that if we all just appeared on Earth, we sprang out the ground, like dwarves in Lord of the Rings, and someone suggested for like a storybook, let's make up the worst possible way you could enter the world. It truly is the current way, isn't it? Like every single aspect is absolutely hilariously grotesque. And I find it so weird that kids are told a much more loving version when they're kids of like, oh, the stork brought you, or, you know, your mum and dad had a sort of special kiss, and then they're given the worst ever reality. And so I've always thought it would be way better to just tell kids, if kids ask where they come from, give them a much worse version, like you were fired out your granddad's ass like a cannon. And then that way, when they finally found out, it was like, oh, your parents fucked, they go, oh, thank God, I thought it was going to be really bad.
On a Channel 4 show, it was like people reacting to old sex ed videos. And one of them was real footage of a real birth. So like a close-up of a baby just being squeezed out of a lady's vagina. And I realized that that was the first time I'd ever seen a birth. And it was for a Channel 4 clip show. Like this supposed to be important magical time in your life. I was saving it for my actual first child, but no, I've spunked it on a Channel 4 clip show. And I felt genuinely annoyed about that. I was genuinely annoyed. They just thought it was hilarious. I was very upset.
So does that mean if you are, you know, if you have a kid and you are present at the time of the birth and they go, would you like to be in the room? You go, nah, there's a clip. I saw a clip show on Channel. I've done it. Yeah.
You have to say, well, I signed an exclusivity contract. So I technically Channel 4 owns the rights to this.
Yeah.
So we have an email in from Harry.
Harry, never worry. Ugh.
So he says, hi Pierre and Phil, founding farter here. So that's nice, hello. I was never much of a fan of toilet humour as a boy, but you won me over with your theory that bread in all languages sounds like a fart.
It does. Pan. Brot. Brot.
Brot is definitely the worst one, because it's got the word rot in it, I think is the...
Bread. Referring to a fart or a shit as sourdough is a horrible... so he says, you... He says, you won me over with your theory that bread in all languages sounds like a fart, and now I'm a dedicated crudist. Hooray! I decided to write in with my own personal poo story. Like many middle-class teens in northwest London, I opted for D of E at school rather than have to do community service with the social outcasts who nobly chose to entertain the elderly in retirement homes.
Oh, I thought that's something you had to do as in part of D of E, wasn't it? Like there was a community service aspect.
I think that's it was. You could replace it with sport, couldn't you?
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, he says, presumably witnessing plenty of loose bowels in the process. So instead, we spent 3 nights camping in Snowdonia. Being the prudish clean boy that I am, I had planned for 4 days of potential shits in the woods. My week's supply of food consisted of white bread and squeezy honey.
Whoa. Wow.
This would provide me, how about that? This would provide me, he says, with the energy for the walking, but it would be without fruit or veg or anything else fibrous so as to bung up the pipes. Or at least slow the system enough that the poo would not be so sloppy.
But yeah, it sounds like a very Winnie the Pooh diet. Is that what he did to stop himself from just shitting in 100 Acre Wood?
Winnie the Pooh has to eat like that because he knows he doesn't own or wear pants, and so the risks.
Yeah, absolutely. If they're just falling out, he's not fully continent.
Yeah, exactly, yes. So he's trying to imitate your natural ability, Glenn, here.
Mm. Many have tried.
Yes. So he says, my teammates did not have such foresight. So he's implying his teammates here had, 11 tins of Jerusalem artichokes and prunes. They were just absolutely devastatingly regular. One day, just as we were about to start ascending a small Welsh mountain, my friend, who had been desperate to relieve himself of a large poo for almost a day, spied a small and perfectly round hollow up ahead. So loudly, he exclaimed that this was to be his chosen natural toilet bowl. He ran up to the lip of the bowl and disappeared. The rest of us decided to climb the mountain, eat lunch, and wait for him to catch up. We then watched as our friend, visibly lighter both physically and emotionally, bounded up the mountain, beamed, and claimed that he has just done a monster shit. Always one to debrief with the team, he described his experience in detail. Soon we were all familiar with the sheer enormity of his poo, and its rightful place in the center of the hollow. As we were eating lunch, we watched with slow dawning horror as a minivan drove up a nearby road and unloaded 15 9- or 10-year-old school kids.
Yes.
All armed with clipboards and magnifying glasses. They all piled into the small hollow and started rummaging around on the ground. Some of them on their hands and knees. Had our friend's huge poo attracted the interest of the finest minds in toilet humour from across North Wales? We stopped a passerby and asked him why there were so many schoolchildren inspecting the ground, and therefore almost certainly our friend's gigantic poo, with magnifying glasses and making detailed notes. Why, that's a place of special scientific interest, he answered proudly. That hollow is the only patch of ground where a rare species of orchid grows in the entire UK.
This is like an Oscar Wilde farce, but just turd related.
a turd in a hollow?
God, it's almost too perfect.
I love the idea of what the school teacher would have to say to be like, oh no, there's a giant fox that lives on this mountain.
Yeah, yeah.
Hope you enjoy. Still thinking about it. Thinking about it still makes me laugh. Thanks for the podcast. It's a small glimmer of brown in an otherwise grey week. Koji, Harry.
Well, thanks, Harry. That's a lovely story. That's very funny. Open ending, though. I don't know what happened.
I think they must have just fled the scene.
Also, outdoor shitting, I find such a stressful, stressful concept. Mm. I think there's just so much shame attached to the act in the first place that anyone seeing you do it would just ruin your life.
Yes, I've never had to do an outdoor shit. I've always been able to Indiana Jones it myself at the last minute to a proper facility. Mm. Thank God.
Phil,
is my silence deafening? No, not out in the woods. No, I did once shit into a pipe of an unfinished toilet.
Oh wow! Okay,
the sniper.
They were building an extension in the new toilet, and there was just a pipe sticking out where the toilet was gonna go. And I needed a poo, and I couldn't be bothered to run back in the house. This was when I was a kid, and I hated pooing. I was like Glenn, but I still had to. I just really hated it. And so I just ran up to this pipe and just squatted over it and thought, well, this will just go to the same place, right? And I just shat in this pipe and just stuck to the rim of the pipe and it just stayed there. And then I just ran back in the house, and the next day the construction people had to come back to finish the job, and Lord knows how they reacted. I avoided them.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's gross. It's very bad. I think that's much worse.
Such is the infrequency of my previous movements that I count like shitting in a public toilet as like shitting outdoors for me. That like that is as bold and as untoward for me.
Yeah, I suppose given that in your sort of situation, Glenn, your shits could have their own Google diary entry.
I found every time I have needed to use like a public restroom, I know that I it has been unbearably stressful for me because I've been like, no, this is for home. This is.
Is your fear that someone will come in?
I don't know. I think I've just had bad luck. I've had bad luck in terms of people just fucking hammering on the door, or just. I remember once on holiday. This was only a couple of years ago, but once on holiday, and it was just being this. It was just this toilet next to a beach. And it being sort of like dim, like flickering lights, like Resident Evil, wet, sandy floor. And the cubicle had such a high gap between the floor and the cubicle, and an enormous gap between... it was like when Lieutenant Dan goes for shit in Vietnam and he's just in full view of like Bubba and Forrest Gump. Like it was... You could just make eye contact with someone over the top of the door. So I was really... I was in like the brace position to try and sort of like... hide myself as much as possible, and someone was just hammering on the door the whole time going, open it, open the door. And just a minute. And they were furious. They were so angry, but they'd given me like 30 seconds, and it was just, and then like as I left there was this queue of like 15 people like snaking out the door who'd all just been waiting for me to finish.
How long had you been in there?
Just a couple of minutes. It just poor timing. Awful.
Started like when I'm sat on the toilet of a public restroom, to pass the time, I practice what my reaction would be if someone were to open the door on me. And so I just try to go through my options and just try like just to get ready for it. So I play really cool and stuff. Like I look up and like, hey, I'd like try to come up with a joke. Like so,
When someone in a rom-com practices asking a girl out and you see them in the mirror going, hey, no, that won't work. Do you want to go for dinner?
What would be crazier than opening a door accidentally on a shitting man and he just does double finger guns? And says like, yowza! And you go, he planned that. It's his catchphrase.
Oh, that he's sitting side saddle. He does a little cheeky turn to the left.
I accidentally walked in on an elderly shitting woman in New York about 5 years ago, and she gave such a shriek, and I was mortified and sort of ducked immediately out. And it was such a profound
I'm shitting
shriek
here.
That she gave that I was like nervous to check the papers the next day and for a couple days afterwards to be like, did she die? I was
extra, extra. Grandma scared to death mid shit. I once walked in on a toilet on a train, and the toilet was full of shit, and there was a little kid, like maybe like 5 or 6 years old, a little girl looking at the shit, like with her hands on her hips, like, can you believe this? And then like looked up at me with an expression that said, God, what the fuck? And I was like, oh, sorry, and I just left, and it was. I still don't really understand if it was their shit or but I knew I had to leave.
Honestly, other people's reactions to shit is so funny. And I find anyone like I've had this image in my head for so long, and it's not really like a character as such, but it's the idea of a businessman who's so serious that he gets furious about the idea of shitting because it's like it's time away from his company and it's time away from work. And he assumes that everything has a natural process and a reason. So every time he shits, he's just furious. And he's like, what is this? This is useless.
If it's like a, it's like Glengarry Glen Ross.
I can't do anything with this. This is farcical.
Toilets offer closers. Always be constipated. That's why he's so against the coffee machine, maybe, in that film.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
So we've got a really good story here for us to enjoy, guys. I'm pretty excited by it, I think. We've got it in from Matt.
Matt, give us your splat story.
So he says, "Dear the Buddington Peas,"
that's
and
nice.
That's apparently a reference to the Poddington Peas.
Mm-hmm. What's the Poddington Peas?
It was a TV show, I think, for children in, like, I don't know, maybe the '70s. I think
it's a kid show. Yeah, he sent a YouTube link, so I had a quick watch of the intro, and I recommend looking up the intro to the Poddington Peas because it is, I would say, shockingly synth heavy for a children's show.
Ooh.
There's a lot of synth going on initially, and I find that very odd.
There was a real period of, synth-heavy kids shows. Like, every kids show in the 80s had the Stranger Things intro. I swear to God.
Yes. Yes, and I still remember being quite weirded out by the 90s cartoon of Spider-Man that was sung by a robot. Spider-Man. It's sung by, like, a robot voice. And it's very sort of techno-heavy and weird. So he says, "Dear the Buddington Peas," and he says it's deletable praise, but I'm going to sum it up because it's very nice. He says, "Podcast is great. Thank you to my cousin Flora," and this is the reason I'm mentioning it is because he mentions her in the story. "Thank you to my cousin Flora, who introduced me to your podcast. Phil, we saw you at Glastonbury after Sarah Keyworth, a friend of ours, and you smashed it. Pierre, you're a new addition to my comedy world. Grandma Caveman's pop fizz clink nearly made me crash my car and die on the M27. Anyway, Koji and I love you both. We love you too, Matt. Thank you very much for those
Thanks,
words.
Man.
In these trying times, they are a real tonic. And I had kind of forgotten about pop fizz clink from Grandma Caveman. So that's nice to remember. So here's the tale. My girlfriend and I," he says, "Matt. My girlfriend and I recently visited my aforementioned cousin, Flora, who lives in Dubai with her husband. We had planned the trip for months in advance, arranging our itinerary down to the minute, and planned every last detail. It was going to be the holiday of a lifetime. However, as they are wont to do, our best-laid plans went awry. Midway through the trip, Flora fell ill. Nothing serious, I might add, but all of a sudden, our primary host seemed to spend the majority of her time in the upstairs loo. As everyone who knows that there are two loos in a building understands, those who go to the upstairs loo rather than the downstairs one are, in a layman's terms, shitting their guts out. Up until this point, I had always been blessed with a gastric infrastructure that was, by most standards, cast iron. I had eaten four-day-old fish and survived. I had eaten a sausage roll I'd found in the back of my car that was 3 months out of date.
Wow. Wow.
And I had eaten two large Domino's pizzas on the bounce.
Yes.
Nice. All I had ever suffered was some minor turd inconsistency. I feared nothing. It was the final night of our trip, when we wandered through the Golden Souk and explored the old town, that an awakening happened inside me. Everything was, for the first time, not okay. It was around this time that a now-recovered Flora suggested we all buy a traditional Indian takeaway.
Oh.
Convinced as I was of my hitherto trustworthy gut, I thought that it was only a passing sensation and that all would be well. It is worth mentioning at this stage that in Dubai, if you don't have air conditioning, you have very strong fans, he says. Mm. My girlfriend and I had such a fan next to our bed that evening.
And that's a piece of equipment, not someone who really likes your work.
Yeah.
Just stood next to you in the bed going, it's really okay, you don't have an air conditioner.
A really muscular fan. A really strong guy. So they've got this big fan next to the bed to keep them cool in the heat. He says, I ate that Indian takeaway. I hated every fucking mouthful. But out of courtesy to Flora and furious anger towards my own gut's ineptitude, I persevered. At around 2 a.m., I chanced my first fart. It was a fart that, had I not caught it, would have laid brown siege to Flora's spare bed, and probably the surrounding floor.
Wow.
Unfortunately, the smell preceded the inevitable torrid flow of hot turds, and I fired that smell straight into the fan. This then proceeded to blast my girlfriend and I with a stench of gastroenteritis. And falafel, with the force of a hand grenade covered in fertilizer. My girlfriend, a heavy sleeper, quietly said, fuck! And then...
What, just from the smell alone?
My girlfriend, a heavy sleeper, so she's asleep, quietly said, fuck! And then gagged in her sleep so hard that I then did partially shit myself. The idea of an unconscious woman going, oh fuck. After a big fan has blown this thing over the bed.
Oh, so I want to know how it then affected her dream and whatever she was dreaming of.
Yes. So.
Oh, so was she still asleep? Or,
yeah, she's asleep, man.
Her up? Okay.
So he says, my girlfriend, a heavy sleeper, quietly said, oh, fuck, and then gagged in her sleep so hard that I then did partially shit myself.
Well, how does her gagging cause you to shit yourself?
Maybe this the laughter or the shock of going, oh my God, she's noticed.
Just a shame.
Just a little
shame just shoves it out.
Yeah. So he says, that's the situation he's in, right? He says, I scampered to the loo upstairs and proceeded to cack my lungs out.
Gosh.
20 minutes later, my word.
That's an episode of The Simpsons.
An episode of The Simpsons of pure battle. 20 minutes later, I got back into my bed with my presumably quite shaken girlfriend, who said, are you okay? To which I responded by running out of bed and blasting my hot bum piss so hard into the cistern that it hit Flora's shower curtain 2 feet away.
Well, like it ricocheted off the bowl.
Or just spray.
Oh dear.
But he sat down at the time, isn't he?
Maybe he's not. I don't know. But or like he wasn't sitting down quickly enough. Either way, it hit the shower curtain.
Like he did a little turn as he's sitting down and sprinkled.
That would have looked for 1 second like he was like rocket or turbo powered.
Yes, absolutely. If you caught that photograph perfectly, like the day in pictures on BBC News. But Phil, maybe it started blasting out of him while he was descending backwards.
God. Look, we'll never truly know.
Yeah, we'll never know. The important thing is that we remember. He gets back into bed. His girlfriend goes, are you okay? And he goes, nope, and just gets up and runs to the loo and just another spray everywhere. Or as he says, blasting my hot bum piss. Later in the night, I cleared up my shit on the shower curtain with an antiseptic spray that I found, which then made me gag and then shit even harder.
It's really funny that everything makes him shit. Everything.
Yeah, the connection between gagging and shitting is really weird. Like, I know that people find gagging quite contagious, and if you see someone being sick, you might yourself be sick. But in this scenario, the idea that if you saw someone shitting, that you're like, oh, I'm going to shit. I'm going to shit.
Like it's yawning. Well, oh, don't start shitting because you'll set me off.
Yeah.
So he says, I shat all night and then at the airport and then throughout a 4-hour flight the next day. As well as 2 days after my trip of a lifetime.
Wow.
I do you know what? I think my worst ever bout of shitting was also in Dubai. And I think I got sunstroke or something like that, but I was just I was bedridden for most of the time that we were there. It was about 10 years ago. And I was I just kept shitting so frequently, and such was the ferocity and just the burning that I was like, nothing can make, I don't know how to get off the toilet. Nothing can make physical contact with my ass. Even my bum cheeks meeting each other again is going to be painful. And I just didn't know how to deal with the situation. And it got so desperate. I sort of like got in the shower and was trying to sort of position myself and was like trying to almost do like a handstand in the shower because it was the only way to get clean. It was hot, absolutely horrifying, really, really unpleasant. And that's so when you know someone's in the room next to you. That's the, like, I've had, I had a really unfortunate situation once in a restaurant where I had to go rushing to the toilet, which is, it's just so unlike me, but the toilet was like directly next to our table, and it was just like, I'm still essentially sat down next to her, but just with a thin wall between us and both of us having vastly different experiences.
like so close, you could have just opened the door and said, oh, could you get olives?
Yeah, it was like a sort of turd confession booth.
you know you're having a bad shitting.
I have really sinned.
No, I've really sinned. You know you're having a bad shitting experience when you need to start thinking in a MacGyver sort of Bear Grylls way about the equipment in the loo.
Yes.
When you're starting, if you're having a shit and it requires you to use your imagination and mechanical skills, you're having a bad time. So he says, when I got home, I had 3 packs of Dyrolite in 2 days, went down a belt loop and lost faith in any form of God. Anyway, good luck with your tours and all that. This is from before the cancellations. Jacket, real good, Matt.
Oh, thanks, Matt. Matt the Splat.
Matt the Splat. How good was that?
That was great. I really like that a lot. It's nice to be in an exotic venue as well.
Yes, yes. Much like the poo of our listener who nearly shat themselves in Iran.
Yes, that was a good one. He ran all the way to the bathroom.
Yeah. Yes. So we have a Will gets in touch.
Thing is, that these common names are getting harder because I think I use them all up. Will the pig swill? Will
swill? Got to be swill.
Swill. Yeah. Yeah.
Will the ill?
Will the ill. I like ill will.
Yeah. Ill will. So this is, he says, hello, Pierre and Phil. I'm writing this email in relation to your horoscope chat. A girl I met via an online dating app. I met a girl via an online dating app, and on the first date, 20 minutes in, she got her bag stolen. After that disaster, we thought we should persevere onto a second date. And it was a New Year's Eve sort of date before we both went to our prior parties, he says. He was a bit nervous, and it proceeded to be another car crash.
Mm.
After talking on and off, I managed to secure a third date on my birthday, which she didn't know was on the 21st of January, making me an Aquarius, he says, just like me and you.
That's Phil. Right.
And half of me. Oh. I'm on the cusp. I'm the second... I'm 20th of January, so I'm the second half of the last day of a star sign, which some people argue means you're the next star sign. So I don't really know if I'm Capricorn or Aquarius. I'd say I'm a Capricorn.
Okay, all
based
right.
Based on what? Do you say you're a Capricorn on the characteristics of a Capricorn? They don't shit very much.
No, I just go by whichever one. If I ever looked at a horoscope, I just go by whichever one looks like you're going to have the better day. Like, if Capricorn's like, you'll shit yourself, and Aquarius is like, you'll fall in love, and it's like, I was born on the 21st of January today.
I think that's fair enough. And it's, you know, why not? Dealer's choice.
And weirdly, on the it being the 21st January, I've also been on a date on my birthday and not told the other person, and the whole time been nervous that somehow they were going to find out. Like, I'd see my driving license, because you think, oh, God, this is not... It's a tragic
really?
Way to spend...
You've been on a date on your
it
birthday?
Is it weirdly
That's so odd, isn't it?
Do you know what it is? I don't think it was on my actual birthday. I think it was on the night before, but we didn't meet until like 11 p.m. Mm. And so what happened was we were then like, by the time the date finished, we were like 4 hours into my birthday. And then it's, you know, if they ask you, it is then your birthday.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
Must have been a good date. 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, that's a good one. So Will secures a third date on his birthday, which he doesn't know. After an evening of me being normal and bags not being stolen, we finished the evening with a kiss and arranged to meet again. Since then, we've met a few times, but on the way to meet her, I was listening to your podcast about horoscopes and compatible star signs. I don't believe any of this, but when you mentioned to avoid the bull, she is born in May and therefore a Taurus, for some reason it stuck in my head. We proceeded to have several confrontations, and now I'm very much enjoying my own company. Koji, Will.
I think I missed the crux of that. She said what?
She didn't say anything. He was listening to us on the way to another date.
Yeah.
And he heard us talk about how, Aquariuses and Tauruses aren't supposed to go out. It kind of stuck in his head, and then they had several confrontations, so i.e. arguments or shitty dates, and now it's all they're nothing. He's not dating her anymore.
Okay. Yeah, that's another point to the astrology camp, frustratingly.
But it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like they I've seen so many fucking tweets about how Scorpios are megalomaniacs or insane or whatever, that whenever I see someone has written, "Oh, I'm a Scorpio," in their dating profile, I immediately when they do those studies on instinctive prejudice in humans, I just, my ape brain goes, nah. Yeah, they're crazy. I've heard it enough times now that even though I know it's not true, it's in my head.
Well, I guess if you're aware of those...
Is it because of Hank Scorpio? Do you know what I mean? Like, if you... like, I would want to date... had the surname, like, Trump or Mussolini. Because I'd go, well, I'm sorry, but that's so clearly in my head, as you're a bad guy.
I would love to date Hank Scorpio. He's such a charismatic man, and he's so successful.
Fair.
But yeah, so that's a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy story from Will there. And one last quick email here from Rosie.
Rosie, give us a posy. Show us a... No. Rosie, her rhyme's flowsy.
Nice. Thank you. She says, "Hi, Phil Meringue and Pierre No Jelly."
Yeah, that's better. That's much better.
It's good. He says, "I know Phil probably knows who I am. Yes, that's right. I'm the girl who shouted out Koji in the great ex-racist halls of Bristol Old Vic."
Ah! Oh, yeah. The racist thing refers to a joke I did whenever I was on in a particularly old venue. I would say, isn't this beautiful? This place is 150 years old. Can you imagine what kind of racist shit has been on this stage? And that's, I think, what Rosie's referring to. Racist Rosie, I'll call her.
Yes. So she's talking about, I think, like the influence of the podcast on her stock phrases. She says, "I'm a junior doctor, and my number plates were stolen last week. I'm guessing it was a fan from the show of her incredible appearance on your show, Phil. And while on the phone to the DVLA, I said, 'I'm a doctor. How do I get to work now?'" She says, "Once I navigate the criminal underworld of Bristol and actually get to work as a junior doctor, I live a bum-bum life. This means my response to information that patient so-and-so has had diarrhea all over the walls is, 'Oh, brilliant, don't clean it up yet, I'll come and have a look.'" So this got her thinking about the stock phrases that every job gets from members of the public, and she thought she would share hers. So these are those stock phrases, shitty jokes that, like, Adam Buxton would do in the sort of regional radio DJ voice. So, do you mind lifting your top up so I can listen to your chest? People normally buy me a drink.
Oh, no. Poor Rosie.
Next time you come in, could you bring a stool sample? They point to a chair. Here's one.
Yes.
Like, if you needed to ask that of a patient, you'd make sure there are no chairs or anything you could possibly sit on in the room and just watch their eyes dart around desperately until eventually you see them go on the IKEA website on their phone.
I like the idea that it's like, next time you come in, please bring in a stool sample. Oh, here's one. Sir, you are very ill.
Yeah.
Oh, God, like, she really plays it up. Oh no.
Yeah. She said, you're so ill that even this moment of levity could have worsened your condition. Any allergies? None, apart from doctors.
Wow, that's aggressive.
What does that even fucking mean?
That's disgusting. And by far the most infuriating and confusing by sheer regularity is, how is your eyesight? Pardon?
Oh. To be fair, I quite like that one. I think that's quite funny.
It's only funny because it's wrong. It's the only reason that's funny. How's your hearing? Who said that?
But it is kind of correct. It does work. It does fully work.
How's your eyesight? Pardon?
Yeah.
I think the idea is the alternative scene of boring dads at a GP.
Because I think it does work because the idea is if you'd have said hearing, they'd have said pardon. But it turns out their hearing is so bad, they think you've said hearing instead of eyesight.
Sir, is there anyone who knows you're here with us today? Pardon? What? No. Okay, yeah, that does make it funnier, but to a third party like us, as opposed to one-on-one. So she says, she basically just says Koji, and I think she saw us do stand up in the Before Time Phil, which is very nice. And she says, my sister Lily is a founding farter who introduced me to this podcast after I told her about Lou Sanders' Why Is Your Bottom So Dirty podcast. I'm sensing a theme.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, so thank you very much, Rosie, and thank you very much, Lily, for introducing.
Yes, thanks, guys.
For doing a bit of proselytizing work. Thank God. All right, that's pretty much the podcast, guys. We've got a nice meaty boy here.
Yeah, chunky one with Glenn. Thanks so much for joining us, Glenn. Hope it was all right.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
It's always nice to talk to you.
It's been a real pleasure, man. What are you going to do for the rest of the day, Glenn?
I've got to celebrate a friend's birthday, but obviously over Zoom, but also at like 2 p.m. And I think that implies they've got such low self-esteem that they didn't even feel confident if they'd held a birthday celebration at like 9 p.m. that people would have showed up.
Shall we leave that in, or shall we just...
Can if you want. Fuck him. Hey, you know what? The person in question I feel really bad for, because I used to have a joke in a stand-up routine I used to do, which involved saying his name, because it was just a name that I'd easily be able to remember, and the joke reflected very, very, very badly on him.
Yeah.
I did the joke on TV and just forgot to change his name. And he messaged me immediately. And I was so nervous after recording, because I was like, it's going to come out. So I just had this dread for months and months on end. And the second it went out on TV, I got a text from him going, what? And it was like, I was genuinely like worried he'd take legal action.
Well, I hope you got him a big present. Thanks for listening, Pod Buds. And... spread the word around and tell your friends. Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.